Yes.
Senate Health and Human Services Committee will come to order. We are resuming from our recess this afternoon. We now have Senate File 61, Senator Kubley. And Senator Kubley, you have the rapt attention of 100% of the members here in our committee.
Well, I better talk quick then because I see the number has just doubled. Thank you. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman would like to move Senate Bill 61, I believe.
I so move.
Senator Kubley, would you like to explain your bill?
Well, the bill actually just allowed some of our nursing homes that are publicly owned to get a little better reimbursement rate from the federal level of government if they ever get around to doing anything with it, which I'm not sure. But with me tonight is Bob Held from the department. I have a bit of a speech impediment, as you can tell. I've not been consuming too many licensed beverages, as they say here. Just part of the problem. But anyway, I'd like to have Mr. Hill to address the group if he would mind.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair, I'm Bob Hill from the Department of Human Services. Is this on?
Yeah, we've been having trouble with that microphone all day.
Okay. This one I can tell is on. This is a bill that makes some amendments to the reimbursement for publicly owned nursing facilities. And this was a provision that was enacted a year ago. What Senator Kubley, I believe, was referring to was that we're still awaiting federal approval for this, but we do expect that to come through very soon now. The bill initially anticipated a certain time frame. Several of the changes before you are recognizing that the time frame didn't work out quite that way and establishing something that's more in alignment with the reality of it. And this language also changes an aspect of the bill that says that facilities had to apply by September 30th. Of 2010 and allows that instead to happen by that date or annually after that date. And I believe those are the main changes that are in this. Oh, in addition, it makes participation revocable so that the county, city, or hospital district that owns the facility and is agreeing to pay non-federal share of Medicaid can revoke their participation if they should decide that they want to do that. It's a voluntary program.
Thank you, Mr. Held. Are there any questions? Not seeing any questions. I believe the intent is to lay this over. Senator Kubley, we will lay over Senate File 61 for possible inclusion. I do understand there's going to be a policy bill. So can you get that in?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. On the agenda next, we have Senate File 527, Senator Senja.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here to present Senate File 527. I do have a A1 delete all or at least nearly everything amendment. I believe it's delete all. If we could bring that before the body, why?
Senator Sedgwick, we do have the A1 delete all.
We
have an A2.
We need the A2. You need the A2.
Okay.
No, it's not.
A2 is the proper amendment, I'm told, that you want to offer, have offered. And it is a delete everything amendment.
Great. Okay. 873.
Senator Newman?
Mr. Chairman, I would offer the A2 amendment.
Okay, and this is an author's amendment to first hearing, is that correct?
Yeah.
Right, so then we, once this is adopted, then it speaks to the amendment. But is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. We now have the bills amended before us. Senator Sedgwick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a Minnesota Autism Spectrum Disorder Task Force. It's something that I became involved with, I'm not sure, back in 2008 or 2009. We at that point, and I believe I'll just say 2009, through a Senate resolution, actually created by resolution a task force which worked during an interim and put together a report in early 2010, and that then led to the creation of another task force, which was legislatively enacted for 10 and 11. And this particular piece of legislation carries this effort on forward on to June 30th of 2015. And basically, it's a task force to get at the whole question of, or at least to have discussion around the question of autism and how our state reacts to that particular issue from the standpoint of services and goals as a state. As is pointed out in the bill, there's a task force consisting, I believe it's 15 members, a variety of people from all sectors of life from the standpoint of at least dealing with autistic children and, frankly, autistic adults as well. And they then gather up and talk about, again, the state's role in this and file in a report by the legislature initially in 2013, January, and then again in January of 2015. And hopefully through that report and the work of this group, we'll be able to, again, make a little bit more sense out of how we proceed as a state in this area. And then beyond that, certainly how we react legislatively, if in fact there is any legislative action to be taken. I'll just stop there, Mr. Chair, and perhaps call on a couple of witnesses here that have been heavily involved in the task force over the last couple of years, and let them present their testimony. Certainly, take questions if you have any.
Certainly, whoever's going to go first, just please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. My name is Dawn Steigoff. I am the parent of a 19-year-old son who was diagnosed with autism by age 3. I'm a volunteer for the Autism Society of Minnesota, currently serving as board president and service chair of the Autism Task Force. Autism is the fastest-growing developmental disability in the U.S. The Autism Society of America estimates in 10 years the annual cost will be $200 to $400 billion. Minnesota needs a comprehensive statewide strategic plan to provide a lifespan of services to individuals with ASD. We have to use our resources efficiently and improve the current system. When my son was young, he did not process auditory language, was mostly nonverbal, ran constantly, tried to climb and jump off everything. He only slept 4 to 5 hours, had meltdowns that lasted for hours, and had such severe sensory issues that he could not tolerate clothes. We used duct tape to keep his diapers on. I recently received treatment for breast cancer. There was a nurse navigator at one office, a treatment coordinator at another, and our health insurance offered me a coach. All I could think of is I needed this help for my son's autism, not for my cancer. When he was diagnosed, no one told us that the most success is with 20 to 25 hours a week of intense early intervention. Even when we learned this and pursued services, he waited 18 months on a waiting list. No one taught us how to communicate with him, how to teach him language, or how to handle his extreme meltdowns and violent behavior. I learned by attending hours of classes, workshops, local and national conferences, and reading volumes of information. Minnesota has many professionals who are exceptional in their understanding of autism. Yet over 15 years after my son's diagnosis, families still struggle to get their children the help they need. Autism is a lifelong condition. These children are growing into adults. Many will need some support throughout their lifetime. A large percentage of families have a parent who had to quit work to care for their child with autism. Our children will outlive most of us providing that care. Minnesota needs a plan not only for getting children diagnosed and into early intervention, but also for giving them the education and skills to be productive adults, and how we will care for them as adults when their parents are no longer able. So please support Senate File 527. And I would also say that the current task force, all four senators and representatives on it, there is bipartisan support for this bill. So thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senators. I'm Jean Bender. I am the public policy volunteer for the ARC of Minnesota and their representative on the Autism Task Force. I'm also a family member of two individuals with autism. I have a 24-year-old son with multiple diagnoses, one of which is autism, and I have a 6-year-old nephew with autism. I also worked for 15 years in early intervention. And that's important because when my nephew started showing delays in his development and many of the characteristics that Dawn described in a child with autism, I helped my brother and his wife access early intervention services for my nephew. Things were great for a couple of years. He was making some slow progress, and then he went to kindergarten and everything fell apart again. And once again, I was called in to help them reapply, re-coordinate his services and his activities, change schools, and get a program that worked for him. In the 15 months since I did that, my nephew has gone from tantrums and screaming when he needs something, and a few short words and phrases, to speaking in complete sentences and reading at grade level. So we know interventions work. What's not working is in the 15 years since my son's diagnosis and my nephew's diagnosis, there is very little change in the support that's given to families trying to access services and programs. What I also know is that my 6 siblings and my 50-plus cousins, out of that whole group, nobody had autism or the characteristics that would give them a diagnosis of autism today. The 17 children of my siblings and I have 2 individuals with autism. We need this task force to develop a state plan and to make sure that families can access the intervention services that we know make a difference. Please support Senate 5527 as amended. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Mary? Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Centrum, I know we've had this, concept before us for many years, as you described. And I know that one of the big things that we worked on over and over and over again was the makeup of this task force. How does this compare, this makeup, to the task force that was in place for the one that you guys served on?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, I believe it's pretty close to the same. I would look to my colleagues here to confirm that, but I think it's pretty close to the same. But help me if I'm wrong.
I would say the biggest difference is we have asked for the departments to be part of this task force. We found in the current task force that we need them at the table to talk about what's already going on and how we can improve it, and we seem to be missing a piece when all we're doing is making recommendations. And there's no one there that they can come and give us a report, yes, but it's not the same as having them part of the table. So I think that was the biggest thing. And the current task force, that's the only recommendation we put in our report in January, was to get this new task force and to broaden it. I think we also included to work with existing efforts that are already in the way, connected to the University of Minnesota and some other groups that are working on some autism plans.
Any other questions? Any comments?
Well, only say, Mr. Chair and members, I've never had a life experience with autism, but I've learned an awful lot about it in the last several years, and it's an important issue. It's certainly one. I believe the number now is one out of 110 new births that the individual's autistic, and it appears to be a problem that's not going to go away soon. It is something I think that we need to continually look at. This gives us a vehicle within state government to do that and to study the issues and make recommendations back to the legislature, which you can accept or reject, whatever the case might be. But I think it's important that we do this, and I hope we can move this legislation forward.
Thank you very much, Senator Senjum. We will be laying this bill open for possible inclusion in the MS policy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have Senate File 310, Senator Langset.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a very simple bill. It's one word. It just adds detoxification to health and services that can be shared across the river. The Fargo-Moorhead area is basically one community, but it's in two different states. And there's a number of things that we have worked together on to try to create some efficiency. When it comes to detoxification, North Dakota is what they call social detoxification, and they don't have medical facility people there. When they get sick, they send them to the hospital, and it costs them a lot of money. On the Minnesota side, they have what they call medical detoxification. They do have medical people there. North Dakota can send them to Minnesota considerably cheaper than sending them to a hospital. And Minnesota side of the river has excess capacity. So that's basically what it does. And we've done this with several other services on the border.
I'll move the bill unless you're going to incorporate this as well.
We're laying these bills over for a possible inclusion in the policy bill.
Okay.
Senator Langset, that was quick to the point. I guess when you're just adding one word, pretty quick.
Yeah, that can't hurt much.
Depends on the word, Mr. Chair.
Depends on the word.
Senator Benson, are you ready? Or should we? It looks like she's ready. So next on the agenda we have Senate File 1211, 1211. Chief author, Senator Benson.
While she's gathering her papers, we'll make sure they come to the table.
Nifty hat.
Chair and members of the committee. The intention of Senate File 1211 is to give municipalities the option to limit licensing for child care providers who provide child care in a residential area but do not live in that area. So we would be encouraging people who have a business in a neighborhood to also live in that neighborhood, give the cities the option to limit non-residential or non-resident businesses for child care. And this went through the House without any objection, and now we have several objections coming forward, including significant editing by the Department of Human Services in their licensing recommendations. Because I have just received those, I guess I would like to listen to the opposition testifiers and lay this over for inclusion in omnibus bill with more work. So as we listen, let's remember that there is much more work that's going to be done on our side and on the House side. So I understand that we have some testifiers present here.
Well, I'm just going to go in order that I have them listed here. I have Lisa Thompson. And Katie Chase are listed. Neither are there. So, if you, well, first come, first serve. If you'd like to speak to the bill, please come on up and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and the members of the committee, my name is Dana Acree, and I am testifying on Senate File 1211. I'm here taking the place of Katie Chase, Director of Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association. I have been licensed as a licensed family child care provider for 6 years in the state of Minnesota. Starting off as a single mother at the time and a recipient of government assistance, I started servicing families in a property that I rented. And because of my success as a family child care provider, I was able to purchase the home, then no longer using public assistance, and grow to open a second family child care location with a rental agreement. Both homes together serve a total of 18 families and 30 children. I have maintained a child care license that is free of any negative action and find great honor in knowing that I run a quality child care program. Both homes are in the process of accreditation, which is a nationally recognized association that supports the highest level of quality child care. My business employs 3 full-time teachers and 4 part-time assistant teachers, of which 5 are license holders. Together, we have many years of education invested into our child care program. I'm here as a small business owner and an advocate for child care providers to shed light on the impact of this proposed bill and what it will have an effect on the quality family child care programs, the children and the families that we serve, the employees that educate them, and the revenue that is being generated from them. Most new jobs won't come from our biggest employers. They will come from our smallest. And we've got to do everything we can to make entrepreneurial dreams a reality. The bill proposed will eliminate the ability to run a child care program in a home that is a rental property. Paying rent for a home versus paying a payment to a mortgage company does not diminish the integrity of the family child care program. Based on figures from the Department of Human Services, we estimate over 7,000 children who will lose the care in a family child care setting. The proposed bill will eliminate many current and future jobs. If these homes will not be allowed to run programs, the providers and the employees will be back on the unemployment line. This will, in turn, affect Minnesota revenue generated by taxes paid by employers and small business owners. One of these employees will be my mother and father. The proposed bill will eliminate many quality child care programs. Many families will lose a position in quality child care programs that are affordable and reliable. The reality is, not everyone can be a homeowner, and for those who are seeking a better space and a place for quality child care to be ran, should not be punished by ruling out the option of a rental property, but should be embraced and supported for giving the time and efforts to the family child care profession. And now hearing that it's just possibly renting and not having to actually own the home is a little bit different, but my point is still the same. So, thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Scally, and I'm a family child care provider as well, and I'm wearing my family child provider hat today. Dana made a lot of the points that I wanted to make, so instead of repeating them, I will just make a few more. Our situation is a little bit different. We had a family child care business in our home for 7 years in our basement, quality care licensed. And we had the opportunity in 2007 to buy a separate house for family child care and move our care over to that house. So we own the home. But we do not live in that home. We just spend a lot of time there during the week. And we are licensed as a family child care. We are not a center. My husband and I do child care together, and we want to do this for the rest of the time that we can do, that we can work. And that's one of the decisions that helped us decide to buy the house because we wanted to make it a commitment. So that's where we're at. We own the home, but we do not live there. We actually live across the alley. So this would greatly affect us, and one of us would probably have to move into that home so that we would be legal, and that would affect our family. So I'm just going to read a few points that other providers have sent to me in the last couple days. A child care is a good neighbor, clean, silent on nights and weekends, eyes at home during the daytime when many people are gone from the neighborhood. A child care is not a vacant property or a slumlord. Any characteristics of a non-resident child care is the same for a resident child care. We are paying property taxes and often an employer. Rural Minnesota is affected because providers can offer child care in a more central location than he or she lives. So there are providers that maybe live in Woodbury but have own a home here so they can provide child care in a central location for people. Many of these providers are the career providers instead of the people who only hold a license until their own children are in school. If someone buys a home for child care, it means they're in for the long haul. And these homes are often safer than resident child care homes because it is a dedicated space for the children. They're not centers because family child care is different than center care, not just because they are smaller, but it's we were licensed in a different way, but a safer way in quality. We're quality care. And I made copies of this, so I will give you a copy. And that's all I have, I guess. So thank you for listening and letting me wear my hat. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes. Normally, you'd be a prime target for the Senate photographer.
Oh, yeah.
I'm here tonight.
And the video, I thought I'd see phones, clicking.
Any questions, members of the bill? Senator Lori.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Benson, you probably covered it in your intro, but what was the purpose of the bill again? I mean, I heard the opposition, and I'm just trying to get.
There are municipalities. Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, there are municipalities who would like the authority to limit daycares where the person does not own the license and reside in the home. And specifically, these ladies are it's my understanding from the department, 27 in the state who rent or own but do not reside in that home. And the municipalities would like the authority to restrict that, and they need to come to DHS to do that. It would be the equivalent of having a business in a neighborhood, and there's just this loophole, and they'd like the option to close it.
Any other questions? Is there anyone else that's wanting to testify for or against this bill? Unless you've got something else, Senator Benson.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Next, we have Senate File 1179.
Yes, I wish to move the A1 amendment, which is an author's amendment of technical change in language.
Any packet members, author's amendment, unless there's any questions. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is amended as before us. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1179 is a bill that details the supplemental contracting for performance. This bill will allow a county to negotiate a supplemental agreement to an already existing contract between the county and a provider for human services. This supplemental agreement will allow counties to establish incentives tied to performance in order to target and encourage specific outcomes. Hennepin County began to use this these types of contracts in 209, and they want to be able to apply this approach with the placements of out-of-home treatment. I have a testifier here, Mr. Hotz. Hotz. Yes, sorry. Who can probably explain it a little bit more articulately.
Thank you, sir, and please state your full name.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Curtis Hotz. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Director of Internal Services for the Hennepin County Human Services and Public Health Department, and I am here tonight to speak in support of Senate File 1179. Minnesota Statute 256.0112 governs counties in contracting for the provision of social services. Subdivision 6 provides a very economical model by allowing the use of host county agreements. This allows counties to access services which are not available in their own county without having to go through the process of writing a new contract. It also is efficient for service providers who don't have to manage 87 separate county contracts. However, at times, counties may want to expand on provisions written in host county contracts. The amendment, as proposed in Senate File 1179, allows us to do so for out-of-home placements. As Senator Hall indicated, in 2009, our County Board of Commissioners directed our department to expand the use of paper for performance contracts. To date, we have over approximately 100 contracts in place that do so. One area that's out of reach for us for the most part is the services to youth placed in residential treatment and group homes, because most of these treatment centers are outside of Hennepin County, so they're governed under the host county agreements. Out-of-home placement costs are significant for Hennepin County. In 2010, we had 281 children in residential treatment and group homes, costing us almost $15 million. The use of paper performance for these services is a considerable opportunity for better outcomes for the children being served and long-term savings for the taxpayers. The amendment proposed in Senate File 1179 would allow an individual county, if it chooses, to negotiate a supplemental agreement with out-of-county facilities while leaving the basic agreement in the terms and conditions in the host county contract in place. No other county would be bound by the terms of the supplemental agreement. As outlined in the proposed legislation, the intent is to encourage funding tied to improved client outcomes that are both timely and cost-effective, rather than just paying for days of service. Pay for performance can create greater accountability for the provider and at the same time allow a high-performing facility to earn more than just their per diem rate, thus sharing in the long-term savings accruing to the taxpayers because of better performance. On behalf of Hennepin County, I encourage you to support Senate File 1179, and I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've just got on the A1 amendment, I've got a technical fix. I don't know if anybody has any substantive, but it's actually the second agency on line 17, I believe, as long as council is on top of that.
Yes.
It's the first one.
Thank you, Senator.
You're right.
Is there anyone else who wants to testify on this bill or against? Unless you've got any closing comments, Senator.
No, I think
well,
we're good.
Senate File 1179, we'll lay that over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, we have Senate File 837. Senator Sherry.
Thank you for your time this evening. I'm here to present a bill. It's Senate File 837, which is a single public health care program establishment requirement. This proposal is being brought forward from the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators. And these counties have been working, recognizing that with the budgetary challenges that face our state legislature in the coming years, there's an effort, and we've begun some of this work in an earlier bill presented by Senator Benson, to partner with policymakers and contribute to solutions that effectively move the state towards a more sustainable human services system. So what this bill is about, first of all, you should have been handed out a form that looks like this that will help you walk through some of what we will be presenting to you this evening. But this Senate file modifies the state and county computer systems by adding a subdivision requiring the commissioner to partner with several other interested entities to simplify and streamline human service eligibility and enrollment processes. So before we go much further, if it is okay with you, I would like to introduce the delete all amendment, and I think it is an A2 amendment. Before we go any further.
I don't have that in my bag. It looks like it's being handed out, so we'll wait until we get that in front of everybody. And Senator Sharon offers the A2 amendment. Do you want to speak to that while it's being handed out?
I will. We'll go through the details of this. This language that's being presented to you in the delete all amendment aligns the language of this bill with the language that's in the House on the same subject and integrates the language that this committee heard earlier about sending out a request for proposal from the department for a vendor who would share the risk and pay themselves based on returns on that risk for a new technology that would create an online system that will simplify the process of applying for public programs. So this amendment integrates my bill and also Senator Benson's language and aligns the language on the same subject with the language in the House. Great, I appreciate that. I am going to have Kelly Harder really describe the details of the bill, but I do want to say that the earlier proposal from Senator Benson is an important piece of the simplification process that we're seeking to do with public programs, especially the cash support, food support, child care eligibility, and enrollment processes. What the original bill did before the amendment was to develop the architecture or the business plan first before sending out a request for proposals for somebody to design the technology to implement the simplification program, which was the essential subject of Senator Benson's bill, was to for the department to get a request for proposals from vendors to provide the technology. This bill incorporates that, but also has language that talks about and designs the business plan upon which that request for proposals would be based. So with that just very general introduction, I'm going to refer you to this handout that you've received, and we will work through the essential components of the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. Yes, my name is Kelly Harder. I'm the Director of Community Services for Dakota County and also the co-chair for the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Directors. We bring this to you on behalf of the 87 counties in support of this. We've also worked through this language of this bill alongside DHS as well. I wish it doesn't do justice to say that we have an outdated augmented technology system to process probably one of the most complicated multiple programs and systems in the state around health care, cash, food, and child care. And we know and believe that the citizens deserve more, and we believe we can do more. And with this type of bill puts into motion this becoming a reality. In the framework, what it really does is create a web base, and other states do this, by the way. We're too far behind that curve. And it's extremely expensive to the taxpayer. It creates a vulnerability to human error. It's also been proven about how complex our system is in the technology called Health Match, which many of you may have heard, We could not automate our healthcare system because it was so complicated. So this, in essence, in this bill before you, as our author, Senator Sharon, laid out, we believe what first we need to do is a request for information to put a good business plan together of how do we do this, what are the phases of doing this, and the steps so that we spend our tax dollars wisely, efficiently, and successfully get this completed. Once that RFI is done, then an RFP to the vendor to actually come in and start implementing that plan would be completed. What the counties are saying and what is key on this is that there are some fundamental building blocks on the foundation that, regardless of what else they want to add in the RFP for automation, we believe that, number one, there has to be a good quality screening tool that an applicant, a citizen at the state, can sit at home on their web and do a screening tool. Here's my family size. Here's my income. And generally speaking, this person, based upon the rules of the program and the statutes, would be eligible for program X or Y and potentially at this level. And then a question is, would you like to fill out an application? Yes or no. If yes, they could take you to an online application. All this in their home. Applications completed, it electronically then could be verified, the databases of homeownership, bank accounts. We have ways to do that automatically. That's another fundamental building block that needs to be in place there. The counties could process, validate information, and then move it into the determination MAXIS system and then for payment. We also believe there needs to be an online, like healthcare records, where you can be anywhere and online with secure access and encryption. You can access to where your application is as far as being processed. That's another building block that needs to be a part of this. We believe forms need to be pre-populated. Believe it or not, we have to re-enter data time and time every time we go to a different screen in the current system. And it's costly because it costs staff time. And it also is highly susceptible to errors. We also believe that there should be a statewide interactive voice response system, i.e. a voice telephone system. And why shouldn't consumers and county workers be able to call one place to get one answer toward policy interpretation, application, benefits as well, so that it would be a statewide one call center. A lot of our staff spend a lot of time answering questions. And in most cases, it's accurate and consistent, but it may not always be. We also believe that there needs to be an electronic document management system, meaning statewide, residents move, consumers move from county to county, city to city. We should be able to electronically move this data around is another fundamental building block that we have built into this. And finally, a centralized customer contact center. It seems to make basic sense, but we're here because we don't have this. And because we don't have this, a disproportionate amount of tax dollars are paid to fund the manual processing of a laborious, paper-intensive, antiquated system. And so with this bill, we in counties, in partnership with DHS, and in partnership with all of you, will move our system into the next generation of what our residents of our state, we believe, deserve.
Mr. Chairman, line 1.9, state 2.1 environments, is that a typo or?
What line? I'm sorry,
Mr. Senator. Line 19 of page 1, state 2.1 environments, is that a typo?
Mr. Chair, when I was drafting this amendment, I asked the same question. I called the department and they indicated it's some sort of system, upgraded system, and they indicated that they would be here to explain it, too. So.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Senator Marty, I won't speak on behalf of the department, but having been part of these conversations, when I had referenced earlier that other states actually have technology like this in place, including our neighbors to our east, it actually is a general framework of reference of technology that that other states have already built. It's a basic framework and foundation that we could build off of, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. basically, and that it starts us from that environment going forward. So it's a common vernacular in our business.
Mr. Chairman, that may be. I hope that somebody has a good explanation of that before we put it in statute, but I'll take your word for it. I'm just saying that maybe we don't need that common vernacular in statute when nobody knows what it means. But.
We could take an hour.
I forgot. I know I am a co-author on this, and I just want to thank Senator Sharon for bringing this forward. We had an opportunity to sit down with our, what is it, not really the Region 9, the region area, human services departments for our counties, and this is the direction we should be going, and I'm kind of actually amazed there isn't a website where they can apply for their services, renew eligibility, and access online accounts. I mean, this is exactly the direction that we need to facilitate. But apparently there is no fiscal note to this, that we can do this. Senator Sharon, I'm sorry if I missed that.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. If you will notice, if you remember Senator Benson's bill, which is if you look around 1.9 through 1.11, it refers to the proposal that we passed in the finance bill that talks about the shared risk that the vendor who develops the software will share in the risk, will produce it, and will share the risk of achieving the objectives promised by the technology, and be able to pay themselves back from the savings, sort of like we did with electric bills. Then in the House, the costs associated with the RFI is what we're calling now, which is the development of the business plan. There is a fiscal implication, which we are not addressing here, but is addressed in the House's bill. They have put money aside for that portion of it. So when I reviewed this with Senator Hand before the hearing and indicated there was a fiscal implication to that, that he was willing to move forward with that, even if we needed to say that it had to be incorporated in the department for that component, to move this language forward so that this committee understood what was occurring here and what was going to be occurring in the conference committee for the omnibus bill.
That fiscal note for that RFP was relatively large, but this is an RFI, which is different. My guess would be the cost is really just the pacing when we put this together. So your labor costs are pretty minimal compared to what we saw with that RFP.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's correct. You know, it's really agreeing on the elements and the goals we're trying to achieve and getting that business plan laid out well before we go out for that request for proposals.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, this is just a technical suggestion that you can take or leave, but being that the amendment changed the bill substantially and what it is basically doing is requesting the RFI, I'm not sure if it's appropriate to have it in statute. I'm wondering if the House language, which is almost identical, is an uncodified language. I'm wondering if you would prefer to have this in 256 or in uncodified language. I'd recommend uncodified because it's time limited. And
I would seek further counsel in terms of why that what I would be being given up by taking that course or action. What do we lose?
Absolutely nothing. It's still a law. It's just, it's not in the statute books. It's in the session laws. And generally, when we establish a task force or ask for an RFP or an RFI, those things that are time limited and will expire, at, you know, when this is developed, the statute will no longer be.
I understand.
So generally, we put those in session laws. And
And Mr. Chair, whatever the is there a particular motion that should be taken, or is there an action that I need to take in that regard? You simply accept that suggestion.
We can act on that, or this is going to be laid over for possible
committee,
and that could be dealt with in that process as well. Whatever both you and council here think might work best.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator, you can just direct me to take it out of the statute and put it in session law, and I can do that.
That's my direction.
Senator, a question came up on line 1.9. You have at the very end of the sentence, you have the permissive may versus must or shall. Do you want to require that performance-based financing be included in that? Or otherwise, you might or might not get that included in the RFI.
I would not object to that language change. It will allow for discussion in the conference and the between the conferees, because I think this language mirrors the language in the House. You can sort that through later. I'll make that amendment to change may and 1.9 to must.
Aye.
Senator Sheeran, did you have anything else?
No, excepting that I think, and I appreciate Senator Rosen's participation on this bill, as well as others, and of course the Association of Counties that have been really thinking this through and coming up with some solutions. It's absolutely imperative that we invest in this now for us to really have the cost savings we want to have in the long run in this area of our budget.
A number of people reviewing the amendment in the back of the room. Is there anyone that wanted to speak to this, either for or against? Or see you jumping up. Well, Senator Sheeran, then we'll lay this open for possible inclusion. Okay. Members, we're going to adjourn here shortly, but tomorrow we are back at 10:30 a.m. back in this room. And we are scheduled to reconvene. We'll recess at the end of our meeting then, or end of our time, and we will come back at 5:30 in room 112. We're doing agency bills, so it could take a while to get through all of that. So please plan accordingly. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are adjourned.